awarded after he's made all of these awful racist comments. And he's not receiving a Lifetime Achievement Award from the NAACP, Lorraine Miller, NAACP Interim Vice President, said on NBC's Meet the Press Sunday. The Los Angeles Times reported, and the state NAACP also urged Black and Latino basketball fans to stick to the to Sterling by doing what he asked for by not attending Clippers games. So that is what we have so far, but there's also a ton of people who have spoken out on social media, and everyone except for the embattled Clippers owner, who has a decades-long history of alleged discrimination and offensive behavior, seemed to have a response. The league said it was investigating the recording posted on TMZ's website, calling the comments disturbing and offensive. President Barack Obama was asked to respond at a news conference with Malaysia's prime minister during Obama's visit to the country Sunday, and he called the reported remarks incredibly offensive racist statements. "I don't think I have to interpret those statements for you. They kind of speak for themselves," Obama said. "When ignorant folks want to advertise their ignorance, you don't really have to do anything. You just let them talk." And that's what happened here. Obama also expressed confidence the NBA would address the situation and said the United States still wrestles with the legacy of race and slavery and segregation. So much like him, I'm in the same boat. We both understand that there is so much behind what Sterling was saying, because he's not the only man who thinks this. He was just caught saying it. So Obama said it's got an awful lot of African-American players. It's steeped in African-American culture, and I suspect that the NBA is going to be deeply concerned in resolving this. So Lakers Hall of Famer Magic Johnson, a target of Sterling's remarks, said he would not attend Clippers games as long as Sterling was the owner, which totally makes sense. The Miami Heat star LeBron James asked NBA Commissioner Adam Silver to take aggressive measures, saying, "There is no room for Donald Sterling in our league." "Obviously, if the reports are true, it's unacceptable in our league," James said. "It doesn't matter white, black, or Hispanic. All across the races, it's unacceptable. As the commissioner of our league, they have to make a stand, and they have to be very aggressive with it. I don't know what it'll be, but we can't have that in our league," Silver spoke Saturday night in Memphis, Tennessee, before the Grizzlies game against Oklahoma City, repeating that the league finds the audio tape disturbing and offensive, and that Sterling agreed not to attend the Clippers game Sunday at Golden State. "All members of the NBA family should be afforded due process and a fair opportunity to present their side of any controversy, which is why I'm not yet prepared to discuss any potential sanctions against Donald Sterling," Silver said. "We will, however, move extraordinarily quickly in our investigation." Silver said the NBA needs to confirm authenticity of the audio tape and interview both Sterling and the woman in the recording. So the Clippers will be back in Los Angeles for Game 5 Tuesday night. What does that really mean? We are hoping that this is all wrapped up within the next couple of days, was Silver's remark, but you never really know what will really segue off into this, if there'll be a lot to deal with or if it will just be quick and no one's ever going to really remember this. This could be a moment where it just fades out of the media spotlight and no one really remembers it within the next couple of months. So I think the biggest statement we can make as men, not as black men, as men, is to stick together and show how strong we are as a group, Rivers said. Not splinter, not walk. It's easy to protest. The protest will be in our play. Clippers president Andy Roeser said in a statement that the team did not know if the tape is illegitimate or has been altered. He said the woman on the tape, identified by TMZ as V. Stiviano, is the defendant in a lawsuit brought by the Sterling family alleging that she embezzled more than $1.8 million, who told Sterling that she would get even. Roeser also said the recording does not reflect Sterling's beliefs. He added that Sterling is upset and apologizes for the sentiments attributed to him. So this is all, it's really a lot to handle and take in, and there's a lot of things being addressed here with the importance of media and who is funding who behind what everyone's saying, because there's always the back and forth of all of that. So in the recording posted on TMZ, the man questions his girlfriend's association with minorities. The TMZ reported Stiviano, who is of Black and Mexican descent, posted a picture of herself with Johnson on Instagram, which has since been removed. The man asked Stiviano not to broadcast her association with Black people or bring Black people to games. The man specifically mentioned Johnson on the recording, saying, "Don't bring him to my games, okay? I'll never go to the Clippers game as long as Donald Sterling is the owner," Johnson responded on Twitter. He also said the alleged comments are a black eye for the NBA, and said that he felt bad that friends such as Rivers and Clippers point guard Chris Paul had to work for Sterling. There's just so much going on, and everyone has something to say, and I think that's a really good thing. But another part of this whole thing is the advertising and the sponsorship of the team, because a lot of people and companies specifically are pulling out of it. There was auto dealer CarMax, who pulled its sponsorship of the Los Angeles Clippers Monday in the wake of a firestorm of controversy over the racist remarks from the team owner, Donald Sterling. And they put forward a statement. It was by the spokeswoman, Catherine Gripe, and she said, "CarMax finds that the statements attributed to the Clippers owner are completely unacceptable. These views directly conflict with CarMax's culture of respect for all individuals. While we have been a proud Clippers sponsor for 9 years and support the team, fans, and community, these statements necessitate that CarMax ends its sponsorship." Meanwhile, Steve Stout, the head of a marketing firm, Translation, which represents major Clippers sponsor State Farm Insurance, visited with ESPN Radio Monday and said he was advising his clients to cut ties. So from the big lead, Steve Stout, the CEO of Translation, a marketing firm with State Farm as a client, went on Colin Cowherd's ESPN show Monday and said, "What I'm going to do, I'm telling the brands that I represent, let's pull sponsorship." Stout went on to say, "State Farm is pulling out and other brands are pulling out. We're going to start seeing it over the next 48 hours. State Farm has not officially announced anything yet, but this really goes to show how much one man's comment can really affect an entire team and the entire NBA program in and of itself, because now the Clippers team is going to suffer just because of Donald Sterling's commentary." And SponsorPitch.com listed a number of other Clippers sponsors, including Amtrak, Anheuser-Busch, and Yokohama. This post will updates with any developments, and Sterling faced widespread outrage and denouncement over the comments that were leaked on TMZ. Commissioner Adam Silver said Saturday that the league hopes to finish its investigation before Game 5 of the Clippers series versus Golden State at Staples Center. So wow, that's a lot, and I was really dumbfounded when the headline came through. I woke up Sunday morning and I was going through my Twitter feed when I first found there's a Time magazine post about it, and I read it and I was really shocked, and then it just completely blew up within the next 24 hours, and it's still going strong. And I have no idea what really is going to happen to Donald Sterling, but I really do hope that his position is revoked, because there's no room for what his positions and beliefs are. Moving on, there are less complicated and serious issues in the world, but we have a little story on Nicki Minaj, because what is a news story without Nicki Minaj? And as you've probably heard by now, Nicki Minaj is making her feature film acting, her first feature film acting debut in The Other Woman, which opened in theaters this weekend. So she starred along Cameron Diaz, Leslie Mann, and Kate Upton. These are all girls who have been in the spotlight before, and so she has a ton of, you know, living up to do. And there's a lot of mixed reviews, but mostly the reviews were saying that, wow, Nikki, she actually made the movie more interesting, and the movie itself didn't get a lot of great views, but Nicki Minaj was doing great, and I thought that was pretty interesting. My next story that I wanted to point out really quickly was about Lorde, Iggy Azalea, and Grimes. These are all girls who are young and up and coming, and I mean, Lorde really, she's blown up. She's probably considered a star at this point, but she went on to her Tumblr the other day, and she's 17, so I thought it was funny that it was regarding Tumblr, because there's all these things that she's just like any teenager is what I'm trying to say. And this weekend on her Tumblr page, she was talking negatively about magazines and how magazines portray the stars in a really bad light. And this is what she said. "Bugs me how publications like Complex will profile interesting artists in order to sell copies or get clicks and then shit on their records. It happens to me all the time. Pitchfork and the like being, or in the ilk being like, can we interview you after totally taking the piss out of me in an interview? Have a stance on an artist and stick to it. Don't act like you respect them, then throw them under the bus." The post was then reblogged by Grimes in her Tumblr, Grimes on her Tumblr, where she wrote, "Ha ha ha ha! Yes, I agree with this." Iggy Azalea also tweeted at Lorde and wrote, "I agree, Lorde. Music love to flop about it, but when you're completely spineless, I'm sure it's hard to stick to even your own opinion." So these girls are claiming that the media is trying to just, you know, abuse them in a way that they get their own entertainment purposes, but then when they're giving them reviews, they don't really portray them in the most positive light. And I just thought that was interesting. But we're going to go and take a quick station break. Thanks all that are listening. You're listening to Culture Crossover, and this is DJ Synergy, your host, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Welcome back, everybody. This is DJ Synergy, and we just took a quick break, but we are back. This is Culture Crossover, and it's my final show, so thank you all who are joining at the moment. We are moving right along into segment two called Johnny in the Mainstream, where I discuss kind of the underlying counterculture of America and everything around the world. And today we have a little bit of an interesting story. So it is about a documentary that Lindsay Avril and Viridiana Lieberman are trying to release, and it's on Kickstarter. You can go on, and the girls are trying to raise money to reach their goal by the time of May 25th, 2014, so in about a month. And they have made a full feature film called Fatitude. And this movie goes on to kind of look at all the ways pop culture discriminates against a certain body type. And they show some footage in their trailer. It's pretty interesting if you want to look it up. The video, the film's called Fatitude, and you'll get all the links up to that to investigate. But to get all the updates on the progress of the film, you can like it on Facebook or follow it on Twitter. But the whole synopsis of it and the whole idea behind it is that fat is not lazy. Skinny people can be lazy too. Fat is not unhealthy. Skinny people can be unhealthy too. Fat is not ugly. Skinny people can be ugly too, and ugly is subjective anyway. Fat is not evil. Skinny people can be evil too. Fat is not slow. Skinny people can be slow too. It's almost like people are just people regardless of their size or shape of the body. Crazy, right? We shouldn't ban people from calling people fat. Fat should not be an insult because it's an adjective. And as you'll see in this documentary, fat can be phenomenal. And this shouldn't be a revolutionary thing to say. But regardless of the shape or health of a body, the person inside a human being with feelings and dreams and hopes and aspirations who deserves to be treated with respect. What do we gain as a society by making fat people feel bad about themselves? Nothing. We gain nothing. So why does society insist on making fat people hate themselves? It's infuriating and useless. And if you think fat people deserve respect and more positive representation in our culture, you might want to share this with your friends. But it's up to you. So Fatitude is trying to take that cultural norm of obsessing over your weight and trying to become the ideal by having a thin waist and completely obliterating that and showing you that you can have successful women and men who are larger and they are no less human. And I thought that was interesting. I kind of wanted to promote it because if you are the type who wants to see those kind of stereotypes shattered, you should definitely see what you can do about donating to the cause. So there's a Kickstarter, and it'll be under Fatitude by Lindsay Avril and Viridiana Lieberman. So check it out, definitely. But now I wanted to segue over to the best San Francisco spots to enjoy outdoors. It's getting a little warmer out. We're getting into the 90s this week in San Rafael, which I'm really excited about. But there are so many spots in San Francisco, and if you're tired of hanging out in Dolores Park, there's so many other places you can go. So we're going to start with Baker Beach, which is arguably San Francisco's prettiest beach. It's the original home of Burning Man circa 1986 to 1990. And it's the semi-nude beach that looks like it's the closest one to the Golden Gate Bridge from where you're taking that selfie. But that honor actually goes to the narrower, grayer, dirtier stretch of sand past the rocks of the north, Marshall's Beach, accessible only by a winding coastal trail and recommended only for the non-faint of heart. And because people are lazy, the northern, more naked portion of Baker is often your best bet for finding some open pieces of sand in one of our 20 hot days a year. But it's a long walk from the public park lot or a steep climb down the sand ladder to get to it. Turn right at the base of the sand ladder and you'll find clothed and non-clothed homosexuals, pansexuals, polyamorous, and the like, and tolerant straight people. Turn left south and things get a bit straighter, getting more family-oriented and paddle tennis-friendly the closer you get to the parking lot. And yes, there will be sometimes naked volleyball on the northern end, complete with flopping dongs. So that was funny, I thought. But Baker Beach, totally beautiful. Check it out. And the next place is McLaren Park. Did you know that San Francisco's second largest park, topping 300 acres, is right down the southern end of the city between Visitacion Valley and the Excelsior. One of our most unsung gems, which may be unsung because it's a little hard to get to, is McLaren Park. It's home to an entire public golf course, two little lakes, two playgrounds, two off-leash dog play areas, and the not-often-used Jerry Garcia Amphitheater. Some beautiful rolling hillsides and occasional coyotes. Also, there's a 2.7-mile-long loop of trails called Philosopher's Way, completed in 2012, with 14 musing stations that include stories from longtime residents and literary quotes. The next one is Crissy Field, which is the base of the Presidio and is referred to as the Presidio's front door. So Crissy Field is basically where transplants think San Francisco's all hang out, as nearly every SF set show has a Crissy shot in it sooner or later. But are they wrong? On a weekend visit to Crissy, you'll see everyone from healthily affluent couples with strollers that cost more than your first car. Tourist families bracing against the cold, and local teens screwing around the way kids do. Here's my Crissy jam. I park at the Crissy Field Center lot, then walk west along the beach and path all the way to the warming hut. Tie up the dogs outside, go in for coffee and pastries. Eat at a picnic table, mind the birds, then walk back in the middle of their beautiful greenway and former airfield. You'll cover a few miles and the dogs will be pooped, but it's a great way to spend an afternoon. That was a little quote from Eve Beatty. And I love Crissy Field because it is something that's really familiar to me. And one time I even biked across the Golden Gate Bridge down through Crissy Field to the AT&T Park for a baseball game. And it's just so beautiful and timeless. I go there and I always feel like I'm visiting it for the first time because it is so stunning. But they're kind of true about, or what Eve Beatty was saying is totally true when they think, the tourists think that's where everyone hangs out. So the next location is Sutro Heights Park, and this place is one of the Outer Richmond's greatest gems, a lovely lush park that overlooks Ocean Beach and Land's End, but is just out of the loop enough to be quiet on even the hottest touristy days. The statue-laden estate and of adult Sutro, the city demolished his mansion and turned it into Sutro Heights Park after his daughter's death. But parts of the foundation and a few statues remain, sweeping you out of the city and straight into Narnia. On the weekends, there are a lot of weddings here, but just skirt the ceremony and walk straight up to the western edge of the park, where Sutro's castle once stood, to see one of the most amazing views of the city. And Ocean Beach, we cannot forget about that place, can be a harsh mistress. And I'm not even talking about the surfing. It can be cold and windy. Sometimes you have to climb the dunes to get there, and there's always some giant off-leash dog running straight towards you who might be friendly or not. But it's also 3 miles of pure beach, unsullied by giant hotels or fenced-off areas or guys lifting weights. This is what a San Francisco beach is supposed to be like, gorgeous, a little treacherous, and open to all humanity. You can have bonfires on the provided fire pits roughly between Lincoln and Fulton, and run your dog off-leash from Stairwell 21 all the way to the Cliff House Cliffs. I'll note that many Ocean Beach surfers, both genders, change their clothing in the parking lot, which is a reason to avoid or head straight to the area, depending on your voyeuristic position. So definitely bring jackets, even if it's hot where you are. Hit the restroom, because there aren't any on-site facilities. And don't tote drinks in glass containers. They're not allowed, and people do get fined. The Presidio is also another astonishingly beautiful place with hidden beaches, a cliffside hiking trail, and lush eucalyptus forest. The Presidio offers multiple ways to get outside without leaving town. To focus your woodland meanderings, seek out Andy Goldsworthy's trio of art pieces, spire, woodline, and treefall. Alternatively, you can just skip nature altogether and go have brunch on the patio at Presidio Social Club or on the lawn for the Presidio picnic. So Bernal Heights, which is another beautiful place, all of these places are beautiful, so I don't know why I keep reiterating that, but for money, Bernal still hosts some of the finest views of San Francisco without all the tourists. Come for the sunrise over the bay or a renegade piano concert at sundown as the city lights up. Or just come in the middle of the day to relax into the hill's steep slopes and make yourself a crown of California poppies. Bonus, you get to stroll through blocks worth of Bernal's charming architecture to get there. Alamo Square Park is another one, and it lacks kind of acreage, but it makes up for it in nostalgia thanks to a backdrop that is basically the platonic ideal of San Francisco. And if you like warm, then Golden Gate Park is a good one because sunny moments punctuated by glacial fogginess without any notice, then Golden Gate Park is the place for you. Bring layers and lots of them. Letting it all hang out at Jane Warner Plaza if you want to stick it to the man. Head over to the Castro wearing one of those weird bikini underwear thongs that hold your nuts snugly in the front, but reveal yourself in the back. You'll be sure to shock those squares. So if you're a little bit on the more trying out and adventure side, go to Jane Warner Plaza. The Embarcadero also is a place that just doesn't get better than a jaunt along the Embarcadero on a sunny day. The bridge, the bay, the ballpark, the bow and arrow, this is a route I take when I need cheering up. The South Park is a European park hidden in SoMa and was featured in Rent and Blue Jasmine, which is one of San Francisco's oldest parks, dating back to 1854. It's a hot spot during the lunch hour with tech ilk and local color alike. The weekends are more quiet and a serene place in the sun that very few frequent. So those are all my places that you should definitely go and check out now in summertime, next year, whenever you're bored or whatnot. But San Francisco is so historic and so beautiful that you really should take full advantage of the place. And I think that you will not be disappointed. There's so much to do in San Francisco, and you don't even really have to pay money. You just kind of have to walk around, and if you really want to get from place to place, you can get the Mooney, which is just $2 for the day. And there's another perk to San Francisco because they're now having a little bit of a situation where an estimated 4,000 bikes are stolen in San Francisco, and in an effort to help put a dent in that number, Safe Bikes is asking you to register with them. It takes 5 minutes and could help you get your ride back. So why register for Safe Bikes? When your bike gets stolen, San Francisco Police Department scours its database for info, but when nothing turns up about your missing wheels, they turn to Safe Bikes. A program that was developed by Park Community Police Advisory Board. So FFPD's Matt Friedman of SFPD Bike Theft says to make sure you file a police report and know your serial number. But if you can't file a report, some people don't have time or just don't want to deal with the cops. At the very least, take 5 minutes to register your bicycle. He adds, learn how to lock up your bike too. The bike has always been an issue for everyone since dawn of time because it is a vehicle that can get you to wherever as long as you're willing to put the work in, but so many people just toss it aside and don't remember to lock it up, or they're not smart about it and they get their bike stolen. And I think that it's a really cool thing that they're trying to bring that all down. And definitely San Francisco, that's crazy that 4,000 bikes are stolen a year. So we are going to take another break in just a minute, and we're going to come back for virality, the last part. And I cannot wait to get back to all of this because we are having such a blast on here. I've had so much fun this semester working on finding stories about everything between the pop culture to the indie culture. And I think that you have all been such great supporters. I just like thank my dad who listens whenever he can. So thank you for that, Papa. And we are going to move to the break, and I'll talk to you all super soon.
Tell me what you think now. Tell me what you say, come again. If you cannot stay down, then you do not have to pretend like there is no way out. I should have never let you in, cause you got me face down. And don't take this personal. You're the worst, you know what you've done to me. And although it hurts, I know I just can't keep running away. I don't need you, I don't need you, I don't need you, I don't need you, but I want you. I don't mean to, I don't mean to, I don't mean to, I don't mean to, but I love you. What you say now? Tell me what you say. You said that you would come again. You said that we would remain friends, but you know that I do not depend on nothing or no one. So why would you show up so uninvited?
Welcome back, everybody. This is DJ Synergy on Culture Crossover. For those of you just joining us, we were talking about Donald Sterling in the first segment, a lot about that and his racist commentary over the weekend and just the whole implications with the Clippers team and the whole NBA program and the globe in general in regards to racism and cultural acceptance. And then we are talking about, in the last segment, joining the mainstream, the coolest places and most beautiful spots in San Francisco where you can just go and kind of zen-like, have a release and just relax and sit down. But now we're going to transition into virality, the third segment. And I want to talk to you today about the selfie. And it's just impossible to escape the cultural phenomenon that is the selfie. The word is now even in the Oxford Dictionary. And in fact, selfie was their word of the year in 2013. We even have the Selfie Olympics, which are dedicated to generating the best photo. What's the secret to having a selfie go viral? The location, the situation, strangeness, criminal activity, whatever it may be. Once the content gains momentum on the internet, it's out there forever in cyberspace for all to see and judge. So I'm going to explain to you some viral selfies that you probably missed. So we're going to start and a man known only as Christian took a selfie while taking part in the Houston Bull Run this year. Photographer David Barlow captured the epic selfie for the Houston Press during the event. Christian is alive and well and was not injured by the bull, and he also was able to make a video during the running of the bull that went viral. This photo of teenager Jack Fletcher is the next one, and it went viral after he tweeted it with caption, "Taking the selfie to radioactive levels." The teen actually received backlash from various blogs for the photo's insensitivity. It was him posing at a radioactive plant, which I don't see why there'd be backlash. You know, the radioactivity in all the plants that we have, they should be penalized for what they're doing to our Earth. And the third one is by photographer Paul Martinka, and it was in 2013 in December. The New York Post caught an unidentified woman taking a selfie in front of a suicidal man who was being rescued from the Brooklyn Bridge. Even though the woman declined to give any information about herself, the Post took it upon themselves to publicly shame her on the front page. The photo went viral, and the woman to this day remains anonymous. I thought that was pretty interesting that a woman would think that it's appropriate to take a selfie during that time. The next one is by Peter Kavanaugh in September of 2013. And Peter Kavanaugh, 26, was part of a mob who generated 30,000 pounds, or about $50,000, every month from the distribution of heroin and cocaine. The photo of him kissing banknotes went viral after police found the photos on Kavanaugh's mobile device, and he is now serving a 3-year sentence. That totally goes to show what can go wrong when taking a selfie. I guess you don't ever want to promote illegal activity when you're posting to social media, but I thought that everyone knew that. The Royal Danish Air Force released a photo of an F-16 pilot while an AIM-9 Sidewinder missile takes off and sets the right wing on fire. The Aviationist, one of the largest aviation and military blogs, reported that this may be the first selfie of its kind that includes both an F-16 pilot and an AIM-9 Sidewinder missile. So that's pretty cool. If you see the photo, it's an interesting one. And Kyle Thompson, 21, creates surreal worlds in abandoned houses and forests using items like fire and flour. The Chicago-based photographer, who suffers from anxiety, began taking photos at 19. The result has allowed him to be featured in magazines such as Beautiful Decay, Insight, and more. The whimsical photographs first went viral through Thompson's Flickr account. Excuse me. Kyle Thompson's photos are so cool. You should definitely look into his art, because just the one that I saw, it was super creative and it makes you feel something. So Kaylee Emily and Tori Hill are the subjects of the next selfie, and they all ran onto the field during UCLA and Mississippi's College World Series showdown. The teens documented themselves running onto the field during a 6th inning on both Twitter and Vine, the security guards included. Two of the girls were detained and the other got off with no charges because she was a minor. The girls and their friends even began a Free Team Hill movement on Twitter. I thought that was so hilarious. People can really take it to the next level when at a sporting event, and it's kind of cool that the security guards were really on them about their defiancy, but I also think that they're just having fun. They're not doing anything that's super harmful or whatnot, so I don't think that they should detain the girls, but it's a really funny photograph nonetheless. So German photographer Tim Abman documented his entire trip to Costa Rica by taking 1,000 selfies. Wow, that is a lot. I don't even think my phone can hold 1,000 pictures at this point, because I take so many of random pictures. So the trip spanned 23 days and 22 locations, starting and ending in Manhattan. The photo series was turned into a film titled New York City to Costa Rica, which has been found on Vimeo, or which can be found on Vimeo. And I thought that was such a cool and unique idea. When you go to all these places around the world and you go and you're a tourist, you never really think about just the self, or I don't at least never just take a picture of myself. I always take a picture of the scenery, but then you never get to have both in the same one. So, you know, he had something that is sparking my mind. And the next photo is of some unidentified Swedish teens who were sent to juvenile detention after photos of them preparing for a robbery were found by the police. The teens robbed a Max hamburger restaurant in Halmstad, Sweden, and got away with $370 before police found the pre-crime selfie. Only one of the teenagers, who is 17 years old, is old enough to be tried. Why would anyone ever document themselves committing a criminal defense or a criminal offense or anything? That blows my mind. And Carl Baden, a Boston College photography professor, has taken a selfie every day for 24 years. Well, that's a really long time. Baden takes his own photographs and creates alternate personas based off of his selfies. His ongoing project every day began in the 1970s, and he has only missed one day when Baden was running late to teach in 1991. Baden's purpose is to examine the role of aging and mortality in our lives, every day and collectively. That's really something to think about, because so often we forget about what we were doing in this year or that, and he's really making a move towards remembering and completely documenting the human body and memory and everything. So I thought that was really interesting. For the next selfie, it was Private First Class Tarika Sheffy, who was in serious trouble after posting a selfie of herself avoiding saluting the flag. A member of the 59th Quartermaster Company at Fort Carson, Colorado, is now under investigation and possible removal for insubordination. Again, why are you doing all of these things on social media when you're definitely gonna find it, or someone's gonna find it later and get you in trouble? That is just not smart thinking. Florida teen Malik Wider took a photo of himself grinning while his pregnant teacher suffered labor contractions during class. The photo was first posted on Twitter and received over 20,000 retweets and was turned into a meme, with Wider appearing in operating rooms at JFK's funeral at Pearl Harbor and more. I thought that was so funny that someone would take an opportunity like that when his teacher's going into labor and just taking a selfie really quickly. I wonder what the teacher was thinking. I would probably yell at my student if he was doing that at such a vulnerable moment. But one of the most popular selfies to come out of the Sochi Winter Olympics is of a woman attempting to take a picture with her point-and-shoot camera at the Russia versus Slovenia Olympic hockey game. The accidental selfie was not only caught on live television, but tweeted by Brian Wood from Fairbone, Ohio. It went viral after it began to get favorited. And retweeted by people all over the world. That is just so hilarious to me. The picture is so funny because she's holding up the camera lens and you can see her eyeball super up close on the lens monitor, and it's hilarious. So Chaz Rorick, a 16-year-old from Rochester, New York, completed a photo series that features him dressed up as each of the American presidents. This one's super hilarious. I think it might take the cake in all of them. So he began the project in November after realizing his band uniform resembled the outfit of President Truman that he wore in a photograph. So Rorick completed the series in 44 days using costumes and props he made himself. That was so funny because it just has all of these faces of the presidents, and he's posing with them and making the same facial expressions and everything. He got super creative with the project, and, you know, congrats to him for getting viral and making it big on the World Wide Web. Danielle Bruckman lost her iPhone last year's New Year's Eve, and when she realized that photos were taken by the phone's new owner were syncing up with her iCloud, she began replicating the man's selfies and documenting them through a Tumblr page aptly titled My Cloud Pal. Brockman now has over 250 photos. I had my phone stolen once, and I wonder if they're smart enough to sync it up to my iCloud or anything. I thought that it would be so funny to have all these random pictures of this person who thought they were so sly and sneaky for taking someone's phone. Which I totally don't support, by the way, because it is so stressful when someone completely takes you by surprise and just steals your phone. So I totally feel for Danielle Bruckman. And Rosina Chavez, the daughter of the president of Venezuela, triggered controversy when this photo of her holding a wad of American dollars went viral. Her father, socialist leader Hugo Chavez, has controlled the trading of foreign currency, causing issues for Venezuelans traveling for leisure or business purposes. So Rosina's must have been super upset with her dad to do that one and make him, he probably was infuriated with her. So the next one is by Kai Jordan and James Dornberg, and that it was taken July of 2013, and Kai Jordan and James Dornberg, a college couple, took 9 hours to take selfies at all the 118 subway stations in Manhattan. On July 10th, 2013, the couple planned their route on a map and successfully completed their mission, taking only 2 breaks. That is really impressive because I can only imagine taking that many train trips and hobbling around and everything. It must have been crazy, but super cool photo project and a super cool challenge if you're just bored one day. The next one is by photographer Kelly Nash and dated April 2013. Kelly Nash, a Tampa Bay sports reporter, took this photo during batting practice at the Astro Red Sox game in Fenway Park. Nash was unaware that the ball was whizzing at her and suffered no injuries. This photo is insane because the ball is literally inches from her face when she takes this photo, and it just proves that you really need to watch out before you take a selfie, because when I take a picture of myself, I get completely oblivious to the situation, and I think I've even like walked into something while taking a selfie, and this girl could have been hit so hard and probably even received a concussion for the way that she was standing and the way that it would have hit her. So, you know, just forewarning everybody, if you're taking a picture, make sure it is, the coast is clear. An 18-year-old Laura Williams creates conceptual photography that is influenced by her surroundings. Her Invisible series began when she was looking for props and found a mirror at her aunt's house. The photos quickly went viral on Flickr. Flickr is a super cool website where you can find a ton of original and creative postings, and from all the photos that I saw of Laura, it was super cool because she'd have a mirror kind of separating part of her body. So let's say her stomach, so it would be just her legs and the upper half of her body with her head, and like her stomach would be completely gone because the mirror's in front of it. But it makes for a really interesting and cool photo. Artist Lindsay Bodos started to receive negative comments on the selfies she posted to Tumblr. And in a series titled Anonymous, Bodos imposed screen-capped comments over these selfies. The feminist art project quickly went viral. This is the first series of works that Bodos has created about her online life and the harassment she has received for her selfies. That one was really cool and definitely one to check out because all of her photos, you know, she's a beautiful woman and there's no reason why she should have gotten all of this negative feedback, but it's really cool the way that she handled the situation was just to take all this hateful commentary and put it over something that's beautiful like herself, because no one should be really hazed or harassed at all for what they put online. Unless it's something that's harmful to others, I would say, or themselves. So that's all the selfie talk that I can give you for today. But we're going to move on to another viral hit in the media currently. And it is all about the New York Police Department. So last week, the New York Police Department attempted to create a positive conversation online by starting the hashtag MyNYPD. So the NYPD News posts on Twitter, "Do you have a photo with a member of the NYPD? Tweet us and tag it, hashtag MyNYPD. It may be featured on Facebook." And, you know, the police department was probably thinking that they would get a ton of photos of kids aspiring to be cops who are taking pictures with all of these police people and super cute, innocent stuff like that. Or, you know, a cop helping a lady cross the street. Instead, they got a bunch of photos coming from people who got attacked, tased, etc., and just completely battered by the cops. And the project backfired pretty badly when people began sharing photos of police brutality. But new Commissioner William J. Bratton isn't deterred, telling the New York Times, "I welcome the extra attention. The hashtag was part of a larger effort by Bratton to reshape the perception of officers from the deep veins of apathy of the public," the Times reports, including training new recruits in community relations and encouraging local commanders to post their own messages online. The social media push includes bringing back a Queens Precinct commander who was removed from social media duties when he attracted unwanted attention 2 years ago. The NYPD is one among many police departments that have ramped up their social media efforts, including Oakland Police and Boston Police, which saw a follower surge in the days after the Boston Marathon and subsequent manhunt for the suspects. Although just 10 commanders are currently tweeting, Bratton hopes that all 99 precinct and borough commanders will soon be tweeting or on Facebook and might get their own microsites. At the very least, the department appears to appreciate that Twitter provides an open forum for uncensored exchange. "That is good for our city," spokeswoman Deputy Chief Kim Y. Royster said after the hashtag NYPD fiasco. "We are still out of time in the New York Police Department where there is healing to do," he said. "There is much more work to do here." So that is all for today. Thank you all for joining me on my last show for Culture Crossover. I'll be back some other time, don't you worry. But I hope that you all have a good rest of your semester here at Dominican and take the time to relax and breathe before that test. You're going to do fine. You know, this time in our life, it is definitely an important one, but won't define your entire future. So thank you all again, and I'm going to sign out now. This is DJ Synergy, and you're listening to Penguin Radio on radio.dominican.edu. Thank you all.
Tell me what you say now. Tell me what you say, come again. If you cannot stay down, then you do not have to pretend like there is no way out. I should've never let you in, cause you got me face down.